You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everyone. I am Martina Cunha, and you're listening to Backstage Talk. Hello, and welcome today. I am really excited about this interview. I met Julie through, well, I didn't meet her actually. I just heard her and I listened to her comments on a group of Broadway geeks over at Clubhouse. Today I have here with me Julie Garnier. So hey Julie, how are you?
Hi Martine, I'm fine, how are you?
Everything is good.
Good. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for being here. Like, it's amazing how, for me, it's amazing how social media can unite people across the world and across countries. So it's so awesome to have you over.
I couldn't agree with you more. Thanks so much.
So, Julie, I'll let you introduce yourself. Tell us a bit about you, about what you've done in the industry, about what you... Yeah, your specialties in the entertainment industry.
Oh, gosh. Well, I think the key word in 2021 these days is multi-hyphenate. Everyone's talking about being a multi-hyphenate, and I've been a multi-hyphenate for a really long time. So I am primarily a singer, an actor, a writer. I've written two pilots, and I am currently about to publish a new book with a publishing company called Roman and Littlefield. We're publishing next year with I have a co-author for that book. So it's my first book. I'm very excited about it. I'm a recording artist. I'm a producer. I'm also a technical producer. So I produce events online virtually. I'm also a director. I've directed shows. I have written plays. What else can I tell you? I'm a chocolatier. I have my own chocolate company.
that's real. Like for real.
Yeah, it's for real.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
I have a website that I sell my chocolate products on there. I make them myself. I have a team now. I have a team of employees that, you know, I've employed through the pandemic to help with them getting jobs because they didn't have jobs before. Actors that were out of work are now working for me, for my chocolate company. So did that in the pandemic.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So basically I'm a performer first. Then I have my production company for my virtual events. It's called Broken Wishbone Media. And then I have my chocolate company, which is Pretty Please with Sugar. And then I'm also a writer.
Oh my God. You have a lot of hats.
A lot. I'm really, truly a multi-hyphenate.
That's so awesome.
And I make a living in all of those things. They all bring... Oh, I also am a teacher. I've been teaching voice for the last 16 years. So I'm also a voice teacher. And actually, I started doing it virtually a number of years ago because I was on tour and I couldn't do it in my studio in Los Angeles anymore. So I started teaching on Zoom a few years ago before Zoom became such a popular thing. I was doing it. I was using Zoom, you know, to teach voice. So that's another thing that I do because I'm very passionate about the science of voice and the production of sound and the pedagogy of it. So I've been studying voice for over 30 years and how humans make sound and how people sing and how the vocal cords come together to create those sounds. So,
I'm starstruck. You do a lot of stuff. I love it.
Thanks.
I really love it. So you are a performer first, right?
I am, yes.
How did you start in theater and in musical theater?
Wow. Well, my parents say that I was singing before I was speaking. I started singing at a very young age, 3 or 4 years old. I'm not quite sure. My earliest memory of music was my father putting me on the floor of our rug, our area rug in our family room, and playing a reel-to-reel. I know you're probably too young to know what a reel-to-reel is, but a reel-to-reel recording of Richard Kiley singing Man of La Mancha. Singing Impossible Dream. That was the first, that's the first memory of music that I have is Richard Kiley singing Man of La Mancha. And I've been singing ever since. I just thought it was the most brilliant recording and loved it so much. And began singing, you know, whenever a neighbor would come over to see my parents, I would, you know, hop up on top of the table at 4 years old and start singing, you know, Donnie and Marie songs or the Bee Gees, like anything I could think of that I could sing, I would sing for them. My first play was in the first grade. I went to Catholic school and my first play was, we were doing the Passion Play and the role of Mary, the mother of Jesus, was a role that had a solo song. The only role that had a solo song. And so a lot of the girls in my first grade class auditioned and I got the part. So I got to sing the big solo song in our play. And I've been doing theater ever since then.
So, I love it. And going back to the Man of La Mancha, full circle, because you have it on, you've done it. I love it.
Yeah, it was a dream role to get to play Aldonza, and I got to do it in summer stock a few years ago at PCPA Theater Fest, which is a theater company here in California. They have an outdoor theater that seats, I think, about 2,000 people, maybe 1,500 people, but it's outdoors. So the beauty of that was that I got to do Man of La Mancha under the stars every night. It was magical. It was one of my career highlights, truly. And I got to play opposite the man who played Don Quixote. His name was David Studwell, who actually just recently, right before the pandemic hit, was in the national tour of The Band's Visit. Mm. He's a very accomplished actor. And he was my Don Quixote. And, you know, just to have him singing Impossible Dream to me every night under the stars was, I mean, I'm getting a little bit like, you know, teary-eyed just thinking about it because it was such a magical experience. And I'm still very close friends with David. We talk all the time. And it's just, it's one of the, I'll never forget getting to experience that under the stars. It was magic.
Yeah.
It was magic. Yeah. So yeah, to have that song, Impossible Dream, be the first song I remember hearing in my life. And then years later to get to do it at this beautiful theater company with this wonderful man under the stars was just, you know, heaven.
Perfect.
I couldn't have asked for a better experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you. That is one of the best memories you can have. And I mean, it's just like you just said, it's magical. It's taking out of a fairy tale.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So before the pandemic hit, you were in the Come From Away tour, right? In the Broadway
tour. I was. Yes. I was an original cast member of the first national tour.
Talk to us a little bit about the touring experience.
Touring is amazing. Touring is wonderful. And especially touring with a show like Come From Away, which, you know, the whole premise of the show is about generosity and kindness and thinking of others and giving. You know, our world was a little bit broken at that time, especially here in the United States. There was a lot of turmoil. There was a lot of animosity. It was hard. And so to be living in a state, in a country, in this state, and then to get to tour the country and say, no, wait, there's always kindness. You can always go back to good, was so special. It was so special. Touring is interesting. You know, I'm I'm a single person, so it wasn't as challenging for me as some other people who actually brought their whole families. We had children on the tour with us. I brought my dog. You know, like our musical director, who was brilliant, Cynthia Westfall, she brought her whole family. And her two sons were, you know, they turned teenagers. I believe they became teenagers while on tour. They each turned 13. Like, I think like one of them was 13 already. Anyway, they're around that age. And so they were homeschooling while on tour. So they were still doing school while we were, you know, doing shows. And it's just an amazing experience getting to, you know, fly around the country, seeing different communities, seeing different cities, and experiencing the people in those cities, and getting to, you know, provide this message of love and understanding and care throughout the country. It was, and Canada too. We toured through Canada as well. Again, another magical experience. It was a really, really beautiful time.
I love it. And I've never toured. Like, I mean, the longest run I've had with concerts, with music concerts, has been like 5 days in a row. In each performance in a different city. But I mean, it must be so crazy and such a wild ride being on tour.
It really is. And depending on, you know, what city you were in would depend on how long you would stay. When we were in Los Angeles, we were here for 6 weeks. You know, the other cities, we were only there for a week. So it just depended on, you know, what the marketing team of the mm-hmm. show thought that, you know, could sustain. But literally, I would say in about 99.5% of the cities that we went to, we sold out almost instantly. The show was so popular and got such great reviews that it was, you know, as soon as we would open in a city, we would be sold out. People would be able, you have to see it. You have to see Come From Away. And so we were sold out pretty much across the board. And that was really special too, to be in a show that successful and that accepted by almost every city in, you know, that we went to. So yeah, touring is a lot of fun. But you know, I've also been on tours where we did a different city every night. I actually was the principal female vocalist on a tour called Cirque Musica, and it was a circus tour. So it was two vocalists and circus performers, and we would tour to different cities and perform with the symphony orchestras in that city. So like we did the San Diego Philharmonic, or we would do the Chicago Philharmonic or the Dallas Pops. So we would fly into Dallas for a night and we would do one show, and the circus performers would be performing on stage in front of the symphony orchestra. So the orchestra would be on stage, the circus performers would be in front of them doing whatever the circus performer does, right? The Russian bar or the silks or, you know, whatever they would do. And then I would be off to the side, or our male singer, usually a singer named Scott Coulter, would be off to the side, and we would sing Christmas carols, because it was mostly that tour in particular was a Christmas themed, a holiday themed show. So we would sing, you know, holiday themed songs off to the side as these circus performers were performing and the symphony orchestra was playing for us. So that was a magical tour as well. But again, it was a different city every night, similar to what you experienced.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, that is just, you're a bag of tricks. Like, you've done a lot of things. You've also done other musicals like Cats, Chess, Legally Blonde, Hair. What's been your overall experience with musical theater?
Oh, just nothing but positivity, really. Like, I've been very, very lucky. You know, I feel as though, you know, I do feel as though when opportunities have presented themselves, a lot of time I show up and I'm able to help. But I do feel as though I've been very, very lucky to have the experiences that I have had in my career. I mean, something like getting to do the tour of Cats. We were the first tour of the show to go out. We were the only production, the only, you know, Broadway production of Cats when the Broadway company closed. When the original Broadway company closed, we were the tour that went out after Broadway closed. Mm-hmm. So it was very special to get to do the original choreography and to use the Broadway set. They actually took apart the Broadway set and they loaded it onto trucks for us. So what they had been using on Broadway, we got to use on the road. And, you know, it was also, again, a magical experience to get to bring Cats to various cities when it was no longer being seen on Broadway. You know, something like Legally Blonde, I spent 3 years developing the show. So I got to do all the readings and I got to help make the show better for the writers and for the producers. And that is really my number one passion in musical theater. So when I get to do the thing that I'm the most passionate about, which is developing new musical theater, that's just, you know, there's something special about getting to be the first person to sing a song ever, that someone's just written a song and you get to sing it and no one's ever heard it before, including yourself. You know, that to me is the most exciting thing about what I've done in my career. And is still my biggest passion is getting to create a character that no one's ever seen or heard from before. And I've been very lucky to get to do it for some incredible pieces of theater, like Legally Blonde, like Heather's the Musical, like so many other shows. It's, you know, I've just been very, very lucky to get to delve into that kind of work.
I'm amazed. I mean, musical theater development, I think it's really hard and it takes a lot of time. And as you say, just sitting down with the composers, the lyricists, the writers, and just try things and build that up and build the whole show from the ground up. It must be wow.
It is very, very difficult. And it's, you know, it's also, you know, you're the actor. You can't say things like, you know, this is how I would write it. You know, like that's not our job. Our job is to take what's been written and make it better. For them, let them hear it and let them understand or see, oh, that works, or oh, that doesn't work in the trajectory of that character's journey. That's our job to help the creators understand what they've written, because they just write it and they put it on paper. But when actual humans get to say the words, that's when they can say, oh, that totally works. That's exactly in alignment with what we were trying to say for this show. Or, oh gosh, we need to rewrite that second verse because it doesn't move the story forward. You know, things like that. That's so exciting to me. But then what a lot of people don't fully understand or appreciate is how long it takes sometimes for a show to get developed. Legally Blonde took, I think, 5 or 6 years. You know, maybe less, I think maybe 4 or 5 years, but I was a part of the first 3 years of that process. Mm-hmm. I was a part of the process up until the point where they took it out of town and then they recast everybody and started from scratch because they needed things like massively great dancers. You know, you had someone like Jerry Mitchell who was, you know, directing that project. He is a choreographer first. But this is like, you know, he was really dipping his toe into directing a big project and he wanted great, great dancers. And as much as I can say I do move, I'm not the kind of dancer that Jerry Mitchell wanted. So obviously needed to be replaced. But I spent 3 years developing characters where I didn't need to dance because they were readings, you know. So, or, you know, something where you hear about a show with something like Next to Normal, which I've never done. It's a dream, you know, for me to do that show at some point.
Mine too.
It's such a beautifully written show, but that show took, I think, 11 or 14 years, something like that. I can't pinpoint exactly how long it took, but it was in the double digits of how long it took to develop that show. People don't fully realize or appreciate that it takes in upwards of 4 to sometimes 14, 16 years to develop a musical before you even get a chance to see it out of town or on Broadway. And so a lot of times you'll age out. You'll age out of the role that you created. I mean, the perfect example for me was with Heather's. I was the very first Martha Dump Truck, and I did readings of that show for 3 years, both in Los Angeles when we were starting to develop it, and we did readings in New York as well, and we did recordings in New York of the demos of the show. I'm on all the demos. But when it came to actually doing the show off Broadway, I'd already aged out. It was too late for me to play that part. And they ended up casting, I think, a 19 or 20 year old girl, you know, when I was in my 30s, you know, doing those readings. So there was heartbreak to developing a show because you put every ounce of you into developing a character that no one's ever seen before. And then when it actually comes to having to do it on Broadway or, you know, out of town, in an out of town tryout, you know, a lot of times you don't get to do it because you've either aged out or the specifications for that character have changed. Mm-hmm. And you can't perform the certain specifications that you need to perform, you know, or maybe you're too skinny or too short. You know, there's so many different things, so many different factors that go into developing a character when you can just stand in front of a music stand and deliver the lines or deliver the song. And then when you actually need to do it in front of an audience, a real audience, you might not fall into what they actually need for that character.
Yeah. I mean, talk to us about the story of the song they wrote for you and Heather's.
Oh, Kindergarten Boyfriend? Yeah, I was so, oh my gosh. I'll never forget that first rehearsal where Larry O'Keefe brought me into a room and played the song for me. And he said, this is the song we wrote for you. And, I mean, Kindergarten Boyfriend is such a special piece. It's such a beautiful song. And actually, the lyrics that I originally sang are not the lyrics I think that people sing now. I think we made some changes throughout the 3 years that I was singing that song. But gosh, it's a special song. I immediately took to it. And I knew that, and you know, also because I'd worked with Larry on Legally Blonde, he knew my voice and he knew who I was as an actor. And so when he wrote the song, he wrote it with me in mind. And he, you know, he'll tell you this too. He kind of tailored it to my strengths, to who I am as a vocalist and as an actor. So it was a great gift. I mean, when a composer is as prolific as Larry, I mean, Larry O'Keefe wrote Bat Boy. Come on. Like when you get the guy who wrote Bat Boy and Legally Blonde and Sarah Plain and Tall to write a song for you, for Heather's, the musical, it's an unspeakably incredible, it's a gift, you know? And it's also something that no one can ever take away from me. Yes, I wasn't the original Martha Dump Truck off Broadway, but you know, who else gets to say that Larry O'Keefe wrote Kindergarten Boyfriend for you? You know,
no one else.
It's pretty special. Yeah. It's pretty special.
And you worked on Bat Boy too.
I worked on Bat Boy in the New Orleans production, the original Southern production. There was a company in New Orleans called Southern Repertory Theater. So I got to do that show there. It was actually the first show I did after I left Cats. I got to do Bat Boy. And then when I moved to New York after doing that show, when I went back to New York, Larry O'Keefe asked me to be a part of a series of readings of Bat Boy. They were rewriting the script and some songs for the London production, and they needed a cast to read through the new stuff. Mm-hmm. So they actually asked the entire original cast. I think there was only one person who could not be involved because she was doing a television show. And so she had to shoot during the day and she couldn't do the readings. So they asked me to be involved since this other actress could not be involved. But it was all the original players. It was Caitlin Hopkins and Devin May and Doug Storm and Jim Price and Trent Armin Kendall. It was all the original cast members. Carrie Butler was involved. How I Met Carrie originally. All the original cast of Bat Boy minus one person. And then they had a few other people come in. Me and Miguel Cervantes, who was most recently playing Hamilton in Hamilton on Broadway and in Chicago. He did it in Chicago and now before the pandemic was doing it on Broadway. So it was really like people starting out in their careers in New York, plus the people who originally did Bat Boy at the Union Square Theater. We did all the readings for the London production just so that the London producers could hear the new material. And the script that we developed as a cast in New York ended up going to London, and they did it in London. It was a huge hit in London. So we were all very proud to have been a small part of making that script work for the creators so they could take it to London and have it be produced in London.
That's wonderful. It's a wonderful story. In a quick nutshell, what is the best and the worst of being a musical theater performer for you?
The best for me is the people. I love the people I get to work with. And I'm not just talking about the celebrities. I'm talking about everybody from the dressers and the people who run the turntable, the lighting people, everybody involved. I love working with the people. It's important to me. And I love building relationships with everybody that I get to work with. The worst part for me, honestly, is the downtime, the time where I don't get to be creative, the time where I'm not doing a show, the time where I'm not singing for a purpose. Especially during the pandemic, I know it's been very hard, not just for me, but for other performers who, you know, we don't have shows right now. So it's been an interesting challenge to try to keep up that creativity in a time where there aren't auditions, where there aren't, you know, I even consider auditions to be fun now because I get to be an actor on a Tuesday. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I get to sing songs that I normally wouldn't get to sing. And that might be my only chance to perform that week if I'm not in a show. So I embrace auditions. I embrace the chance to get to delve into material that I wouldn't normally get a chance to delve into. Even if I'm not booking the job, it doesn't matter. I get to play Madame Thénardier on a Thursday afternoon. Do you know what I'm saying? Like it's a gift to get to be an actor for an afternoon. So it's hard when I don't get to be, when I don't have something that I'm working on. That's the hardest part, I think. And I think a lot of people don't quite, a lot of, you know, what I call muggles, people who are not in the entertainment business, they don't quite understand what it's like to be constantly unemployed, to be constantly searching for a job, to be constantly auditioning, which means you're constantly going to job interviews. I mean, I can't even imagine what people who don't do this business, how they wrap their heads around the fact that we're possibly doing a job interview 2, 3, 4 times a week, where most people, they do a job interview, they get a job, they sit in that job 10, 20 years, some of them, some 5 years, and then they switch over to another job. For us, we're doing job interviews 3, 4 times a week. And so that's, you know, that the downtime of when you're not getting to be creative, that's the hardest part.
And in that order of ideas, how have you stayed creative during the pandemic? Because it's been a year since COVID hit, and we are starting to reactivate the industry, but we are far still.
Yeah, I do think we do have a ways to go. I don't know why I had the foresight when the pandemic hit. I instantly knew. My agent was still sending me auditions, and so was my manager. And they said, oh, you know, theater will be back in April or June. Like, just, you know, keep self-taping. And, you know, when things come back. And I don't know why. I immediately thought, something's not right here. It's going to be a while. Mm-hmm. So I actually reached out to a friend of mine who works with YouTube, and I asked her if she could teach me everything that I could learn about creating my own content and producing events online and what pieces of software I needed to learn. And then I took some of my savings and also some of the stimulus check we were given by the government here in the United States. And I invested in really high quality equipment. I bought a new computer. I bought a brand new microphone. I bought a vocal booth. I bought a lot of stuff, and I spent a lot of money. But but I believe that they were good investments because I immediately reached out to all of my composer friends, people that I had been doing readings with over the many years. And I said, listen, I'm available to do demos for you. If you have anything that you're writing that you want me to record, these are the things that I have. This is the computer that I use. This is the software that I'm using. This is my microphone setup. This is my vocal booth setup. And I immediately started getting work as a demo singer. And then I immediately started getting work as a virtual online event producer. And so I've been, you know, through my media company, I have been doing a lot of talk shows on YouTube, on Facebook. And I've been producing concerts for the Actors Fund. I've been producing concerts for theater companies like the Musical Theater Guild here in Los Angeles. And I've been working consistently in a creative way since day one of the pandemic mm-hmm. because I chose to learn how to pivot, how to adapt, yeah. and how to do other things that are creative. I've also since gotten a record deal during the pandemic, so I've been recording my first album. We released a single in November. Again, because I have the professional setup at home, I can record at home. Yeah. And I know a lot of other musicians have done the same thing. So I would contact people like Eleanor Norton, who's my cellist, or Todd Reynolds, who's my violin player, or Matt Fields, who's my bass player, who lives in New Zealand now, who's, you know, staying in during the pandemic in New Zealand, and contacting them and saying, hey, can you lay down a track for me? Here's some music that an arranger has written for us. Can you lay down this track? And then I would record the vocal to that track, send it off to my record label in Nashville, and they will mix and master it and create a song from that. So we recorded our first single and released it in November of last year. We have two more coming out that we're working on right now. One specifically that I'm working with, this is kind of an exclusive, but I'm working on it with Stephen Schwartz. It's a brand new song with Stephen Schwartz. And we're very, very excited. He's extremely busy because he's working on the Wicked movie. He's working on a bunch of other projects. But the moment I brought this idea to him, he was like, 100%, we're doing this. He was so excited. And so it's really thrilling to us that, you know, later this year, I think in the early summer months, hopefully, crossing our fingers that we can get everything done. But in the early summer months, we'll be releasing this new song. And we're very, very thrilled about it. So that's how I'm keeping creative. You know, there's also, I've become a chocolatier and I've created this chocolate company and I'm expressing myself through my food. And that was created also last November, right after the single was released. I wanted something different to do. I've been doing music and I've been doing online producing and that kind of stuff. And I was like, I want to do something with my hands. I want to do something where I'm making stuff, right? I'm making stuff virtually and I'm making music, but it's not something that someone can actually pick up or enjoy physically. Yes. And so I wanted to start creating something that could be physically enjoyed by friends and family. So I started to create my hot chocolate bombs, as we call them. And so I've been making hot cocoa bombs since November. And I think a lot of people have been making them, but mine are very, very different. The aesthetic of them, the look of them is different. And the quality of the ingredients that I use are extremely high. So that means that my cocoa bombs are a little bit pricier than other ones, but you're getting what you pay for. You're getting a very high quality Guittard chocolate. You're getting Ghirardelli hot cocoa. You're getting sprinkles from Sprinkle Pop and from Sweet Tooth Fairy. You're not getting subpar ingredients or candy melts or anything that's just not gonna, you know, really bring quality to your cup of cocoa. So we're very proud of the product and people really, really love it. So we've been very busy with the chocolate as well. So that's happy. How I'm keeping creative. And then on top of all of that, right? is the book that I've been working on for the last 3 years. It's called The Stage Actor's Handbook, and it delves into protocols, etiquette, tradition, and superstitions of the theater professional. And there's no book that's ever been written like this before. And my co-author, actor Michael Kostroff, who you might know from his 5 seasons on The Wire, or most recently on HBO's The Plot Against America. He's a prolific actor. He's been seen regularly on Law & Order, SVU, and many other television shows. He's an incredible character actor, but he's also very dedicated to the traditions and the respect of the theater professional and what we have as our legend and as our tradition. And so he and I got together about 3 years ago and started writing this book. And couple weeks ago, we signed a deal with a very, very highly respected publisher, Roman and Littlefield, and they're going to be publishing the Stage Actor's Handbook in April, I think April or May of 2022. And we're very excited about it. We have incredible contributors to the book, theater legends who are adding to what we've already written. And it's going to be a very special handbook that hopefully will be passed on from generation to generation of future theater professionals. We want to keep our legacy alive as theater professionals. And I think that this book, which has nothing like this has ever been published before, which is why I think our publisher is so excited about it. I think it's going to be passed on from generations to generations of theater actors.
You're unstoppable. I wish that listeners could see how many times my jaw dropped since you started telling me everything you're doing and everything you've done during the pandemic.
I've been staying creative. Yeah. I did not want to sit idly by, and I knew that if this was going to be, a 2 or 3 year process of healing our country physically, that I didn't want to be wasting any of this time, that I really wanted to accomplish things during this time. And everyone, for many, many years, people have been saying, you need to create your own stuff. And I have not had the time to do it because I've been on tour, or I've been doing shows, or I've been teaching both at the university level or privately in my own vocal studio. And I've never really had the time. And when the pandemic hit, I thought, well, gosh, there's no excuse now, is there? Like, you've got to make this time worth it. You've got to take advantage of this downtime where I don't have to audition for anything. And I don't have to, go to the gym every day, because I can't go to the gym every day, right? Like, I can't. There are so many things that are time consuming. You know, when you're living in Los Angeles and you have to go to an audition, you do have to block out specific amount of time because there's traffic, there's getting your face done and getting your hair did, and picking the right outfit and learning your sides and coaching with a coach and learning the new songs or whatever it is you have to do. That all takes so much time. And then you got to get in your car, and it takes an hour to get to wherever you're going. And then you've got to wait, and then you've got to audition, and then another hour to get back home. You're investing in what could possibly be 6 to 8 to 10 hours of time just for a single audition. And when you have multiple auditions in a week, that's a lot of time. And when you book a job, it takes time for you to learn your material, to rehearse the material, to be on set or be in a rehearsal for a musical theater process. That all takes time. And then it also is mentally taxing, right? So you've got to have your downtime. You've got to sleep. You've got to eat. You've got to shower. You've got to walk your dog. You've got life things that have to happen. And then when you're teaching on top of that, when do you find time to create your own content? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no time to create a web series. There's only 24 hours in a day, and you've got to sleep. So you've got to maintain your own personal health on top of that. So when the pandemic hit, I knew I no longer had excuses to make things happen. And so I made a list of things that I really wanted to create of my own. I'd had ideas for doing 2 different pilots. So I started writing scripts because I knew this was the time to write. This was the time to create stuff I'd only ever had. You can't have something happen when it's just in your head. You know, you've got to put it on paper. You've got to pitch it to people. You've got to learn how to use the software. You've got to buy the hardware to make it happen. And I knew the pandemic would be the time to do it. And so that's why the moment it happened, I thought this might be 3 months like people are saying, or it might be 3 years. We don't know. But if I don't get the ball rolling now, it's never going to happen. I'm going to end up lying in bed all day long watching Netflix. And as appealing as that is, I didn't want to look back a year later and regret the time that I'd wasted.
That's amazing. And I love that you've kept yourself busy. Wow. You just said a lot of stuff. It's amazing. I'm really excited about your book. I'm really excited about your album. Where can people find more about you, your website, or book a private class with you right now?
Absolutely. So if you want to study voice with me, I'm doing it virtually. So I've got students now all over the world, and I'm very happy to teach voice to you if that's something you're interested in. You can do that by going to my website, which is www.juliegarnier.com. Garnier is not spelled the French way. It's spelled differently. It's G-A-R-N-Y-E. So that's how you spell Garnier. So you can go to juliegarnier.com and just email me directly from the website. I get every email coming directly to me. If not, my assistant will send them to me. And I'm happy to book a private coaching session with you, whether it be a technique, which is what my specialty is, or if you want help with building your repertoire or coaching a song for acting with musical theater, happy to do that too. If you are interested in my Cocoa Bombs, you can go to that website, which is prettypleasewithsugar.com. I do ship those Cocoa Bombs. I'm not shipping internationally just yet, unless you're willing to pay those postage prices. If you are, I'm happy to ship internationally, but it is kind of pricey to ship them because they're a little bit heavy. They have, you know, but they keep, and they, you know, we don't need ice packs or anything for those. So happy to ship if you're willing to pay the cost of the shipping. As far as the book is concerned, we don't have a website up just yet because we haven't published the book. But if you'd like to get more updates on the book, we do have an Instagram account. That Instagram is The Stage Actor's Handbook. That is the handle. So you can just go to Instagram and follow us at The Stage Actor's Handbook. And as we get things going with the book, we'll have updates on that Instagram handle. And we will also be publishing a website. So we'll announce when that website is published. And then on social media, I'm very active on social media. Pretty much across the board, Instagram, Twitter, Clubhouse, TikTok. My handle is just my first and last name. Smushed together, it's Julie Garnier. On Facebook, my handle is Official Julie Garnier. Sorry, Official Julie Garnier. So you can find me on Facebook there. My other Facebook page is private for my family and friends. So I leave that one separate just so I have some privacy on my socials. But my public Facebook is Official Julie Garnier. And then everything else is just Julie Garnier. You can follow me everywhere. And my DMs are open, so I'm very accessible. If you want to talk to me about vocal lessons or the book or any producing that I do for Broken Wishbone Media, you can just DM me or email me through my website or
Instagram.
Yeah.
Awesome. Julie, thank you so much for being here, for coming over, for sharing your incredible experience with us. I have one last surprise question for you.
Oh, okay.
Top 5 favorite musical theater shows.
Oh, good question. Okay, here we go. Number 1 is a tie because one of them is just my favorite show. I could listen to this cast recording or do this show. I've done the show a number of times and I could do it over and over and over again and never get sick of it. But the other show I've never done, it's my dream to do the show, but it's a sentimental show to me. It just means so much to me. And my favorite song in musical theater is in this show. So my favorite shows are Les Miserables, which I've done multiple times. And it is absolutely one of the best shows I think ever written. And then my tie for number one is Sunday in the Park with George, because the song Move On is probably my favorite song in musical theater ever. I just think it's the most perfect song Sondheim has ever written. He might disagree, but I don't know what he feels about that song. I really don't, but I just think it's perfection. Number two favorite show, probably Sweeney Todd. I think it's so beautifully written. It's probably his best written show, like structurally, mm-hmm. I think. Number three, probably Ragtime. I think Flaherty and Aarons are geniuses, but that show in particular, that opening sequence, that 10-minute opening sequence, and then Back to Before, that song Back to Before is so beautiful. Number four, probably The Secret Garden. Mm-hmm. There's just something beautiful about that score and that story and the way it was performed. I love that show so much. Number five.
Last one.
I don't know what number five. I mean, I have named five shows, so technically I've fulfilled my five. Number five. Gosh. I don't know. Maybe a sentimental favorite might be Man of La Mancha, maybe. Maybe Man of La Mancha. That or The Music Man. I love The Music Man. So if we want to like pick a classic, like a traditional musical theater classic favorite, either La Mancha or Music Man would be in my top five. That's like seven. I'm not good at answering that question.
No, but I love it. I love it. Julie, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. I wish you all the success on your upcoming projects. And let's do this again sometime soon.
Anytime you want, Martine. You're a wonderful interviewer, and I'm just, you know, thankful that you asked me to do this. So, yeah, this is really fun.
Thanks everyone for listening to this new episode of Backstage Talk. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Backstage Talk Podcast.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.